Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the Left of Greg podcast. I am Brian Marin, the host and creator of the show. As always, I will be joined by human behavior expert Mr. Greg Williams, who the show is affectionately named after. Here on the Left of Greg show, our goal is to increase your advanced critical thinking ability through a better understanding of what we call human behavior, pattern recognition, and analysis. If you'd like to find out more about what that is, you can check out our website at arcadiacognorati.com or by following us on Facebook at HBPRA. Please help support the show by checking out our Patreon site, where for just a few dollars you can have access to all kinds of episode extras, videos, and short tutorials that are updated weekly. Just click the link in the episode details that says support the show and we'll take you directly to that site. If you have any questions or would like us to cover a specific topic, please reach out to us at leftofgreg@gmail.com. On today's episode, Greg and I are talking about a case that is about to be heard by the U.S. Supreme Court involving the confiscation of private property during the course of a police investigation. Although the property that was confiscated were legally purchased firearms, this case has more to do with the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution than it does the Second Amendment. Greg and I cover a legal gray area known as the community caretaking exception that pertains to a police officer's ability to perform a warrantless search. If you'd like more information about the specific cases we discuss, please see the episode details for links to the court filing, as well as an article that summarizes the events. Please don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find the links in the episode details. And if you enjoy the podcast, please tell your friends about it. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy the show. Let me know when it goes live. Let me see what it says on yours that it's
live. Live on Facebook.
We are streaming live on Facebook. All right, Greg. So we will go ahead and get started. And we are streaming this one live on Facebook. For those of you just listening in when we publish it, you can always follow me on Facebook and you can listen along live, comment, or just blow me kisses like my buddy Dan does every time I pop up on here, whatever you want to do. So just a reminder for everyone. So today we're talking about a case that is yet to hit the Supreme Court. They haven't ruled on it yet, but it's a case involving a Fourth Amendment issue, primarily also Second Amendment, and technically, I guess, then 14th Amendment as well. Mm-hmm. So it's hitting on a bunch of those. And just to go over real quick, I want to jump into what happened. This is actually originally took place about 5 years ago, where a man and wife, I'm sorry, were they husband and wife? Or were they girlfriend? I don't know.
Husband and wife.
Yeah, husband and wife.
They've been married over 20 years.
Yeah. So they were married, got into an argument. The husband, Edward, came out, you know, brought one of his guns out, said, "Hey, why don't you just shoot me?" You know, then he left. Then the wife put the guns away. Then he came back and this kind of went back and forth a little bit. She ended up staying at a hotel that night and then called the police to go back there, you know, so got them involved. And they went back there, interviewed him, talked to him. For the most part, they said he was cooperative. He was, I think one of them described him as acting normal. So this wasn't a hostile domestic violence situation anymore, right? We don't know all the facts of everything that went happened the night before, but they basically talked him into being admitted to the hospital for psychiatric evaluation. So he did go voluntarily. Right. He eventually agreed to go. And then after, you know, he was, you know, left, the police officers went in to the house, searched the home, and they actually confiscated the weapons. Okay. So then he gets back out of the hospital, tries to find out his weapons are confiscated there. And then he goes and tries to get them back. And they actually denied him. Correct. I'm just making sure I read through a bunch. Yep. I know you kind of just sent this over. So they said he could not have his weapons. And then he then sued. And then we basically went back and forth in the courts where he got struck down. He basically tried to sue back. The court said police were engaged in what they call community caretaking functions. So remember that term because we're going to jump into that, where they're allowed to take certain pieces of evidence for either the purposes of custody, meaning maintain custody for documentation purposes. So like you get into a car accident, you know, and your vehicle's on the side of the road all banged up, the police can search it, take stuff out and hold it For a number of different reasons, right? Mostly just to secure, as well as just securing your property, right? I mean, there's, and to protect them against lawsuits, someone saying, hey, you know, you took my stuff out of my vehicle, and they go, no, there was no inventory of that. So there's a lot of reasons for that. But this one is very specific because they went and took his weapons away from him. So now that you're getting into the violation of the Second Amendment, because those were lawfully purchased, legally owned firearms. There was nothing illegal about that. What happened? It just, they went and took them. So that's kind of the, I would say, the main point of this case. And what they're using to kind of justify this was this that term that I talked about, which is community caretaking function, which the police are involved in, meaning it's outside of an official, I shouldn't say outside of an investigation, right? It's not having to do, I don't want to word this incorrectly, meaning it's maybe not directed as part of some other investigation of what they're investigating, him or her or anything else. It's just there's other functions, what they call community caretaking functions, where police officers are allowed to do certain things that you would maybe otherwise need a search warrant for or some type of warrant for. Is that a correct way to kind of describe that?
And Brian, the reason I just have such trouble naming it in one sentence is because it's wrong. It's so wrong.
Well,
and what you're trying to do is you're trying to create a balancing act.
Right. And I'm just trying to put something on the wall for us to compare against.
And community caretaking is absolutely essential function of the police, and it needs to be around. But in this manner, what we're talking about is taking and trying to solve a person drowning by throwing them in an anvil. It's the wrong tool for the job, and we're not going to get there from here. So we all know, all our readers and listeners, and Brian's going to post the caper we're talking about.
Yeah, I'll post even all though, the links. Yeah.
Even though it's 5 years old, the reason it's relevant is tomorrow under certiorari, the courts have said, hey, we're going to take a look at this case because there's a whole body of cases that are very similar to it. And it's going to go up to the Supreme Court, and we're going to make a decision. I've already predicted, you know, Chantel, thanks, Sean, for, you know, our staunch protector of the Fourth Amendment, the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, Sean Clemens. You know, he sent it to us. This is an outrage. And, you know, I'm ready to play both sides with him. But, you know, we know the right of the people to be secure in the person, houses, papers, and effects, unless unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. But the most important part of that, Brian, is no warrant shall issue except based on probable cause and supported by a oath or affirmation. There's your problem, because what you were trying to define earlier is this gentleman had a domestic where police were called. There was no signs of violence. Neither party had ever been violent with each other, and there was no evidence that violence had occurred on this night, nor was there any physical injury or damage to property, right? And so the woman says, hey, listen, the next day when the cops, you know, said, okay, we're going to leave, because they found nothing wrong that night, Brian, they did not arrest anybody. She says, hey, I can't get a hold of my husband. Would you do a check on the welfare? Now they go over, as you described, right?
Right. But the point of that is, too, they were still called over there, so they have to investigate.
They have to.
Right.
But remember, an investigation and the determination of a crime are two very different things. And I think that's why you and I wanted to talk about this. So the police officers have the right and the ability to lie. And in certain circumstances, using a ruse, a form of lie, is essential. The cops at the ground didn't see anything that they thought was dangerous in the moment, Brian. But they said, you know, we don't want to do an involuntary commitment, which makes this guy 48 hours, puts him on. We're going to ask him, do you want to go get checked out? The guy says, clearly, I want to go and get checked out because I want to salvage my marriage. I don't want this to be a problem. I'm not feeling like killing myself, but I'll agree to go get checked out. But you have to agree that you're not going to take anything out of my house. That was the balance they struck, Brian. And you understand they were using the best interest of the public.
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. And so he rightly sued. I take his part because I don't think we can determine probable cause in the future.
So here's the difficult part of that. The okay, I'll go do that if you don't take anything. Well, neither party has the technically the authority to do so. You can't make on the side right there to say, okay, I'll go do this, officer, if you don't take my weapons. But if the officer is within his rights, he doesn't have to honor that, right?
You're right. So, you're right, but there's your slippery slope, Ryan. Listen,
well,
that's the first slide of many. I think that are coming. But listen, if I agree to talk to you, okay, you have the right to conduct an investigatory stop, and you and I are talking. You're the authority figure. You're acting under color of law. You're the officer, and you say, "Listen, you have the right to remain silent," and therefore, I know now that the onus is on me that I can invoke an attorney. And I go, no, I want to continue to talk to you. And we continue having a conversation. Now, as part of that conversation evolves, I go, this is no longer in my best interest. I can invoke that, listen, I no longer want to speak to you. You can't go back retroactively and say, yeah, but you were speaking to me in the first place. And I think that's what happened here, Brian. I think the coppers are worried about this family. They're specifically worried about the husband harming himself. Legitimate concern. But he's committed no crime. So if he voluntarily agreed to go with them, and in the bargain, he says, hey, listen, as long as you don't take my two guns, two specific guns that have been mine, I think it's well within his right to do that. What he did is he made a bargain with the police saying, because I haven't committed a crime, please don't come into my house and take my guns.
So here's where, policy and procedure, it becomes, I give this as another example of what happens when instead of focusing on making our people better, like instead of focusing on let's give the police the best training ever, we're just going to put in policies and procedures to make sure that you must do X, Y, or Z when A, B, or C happens, right?
And cover our ass as an agency.
And I'm not saying that this is why that has had to occur because we don't invest in it. And then something happens and we go retroactively go, well, that police officer made the wrong decision. We don't go, all right, well, let's train our people better. Let's pass a policy or procedure. And then now they no longer have the ability to interpret the situation based on their training, their experience, and their judgment to go, here's what we should do. They don't get that anymore. So now they're going down the checklist of things to do.
Precisely.
And so now it comes into when you have this, because mental health issues are different. We have the law, we have the Constitution, we have certain rights, but then we don't have a clear interpretation of, well, what if these mental health situations or these, and then who determines that? Because right there, the police says, well, the guy, oh, he's cooperative and normal to me. Are you a mental health professional? Are you a, you know what I mean? Like where do they get
they're to trained. They're trained. They have received training. But is their training commensurate with the situation they now find themselves with?
Okay, so totally we're already here before we even get into the constitutionality of the case, right? We're already under, and that's why I want to bring this stuff up now, because this is everything that contributes to cases like this. This is how these things occur. This is how you go because now what happens from this is everyone has a. Now there's going to be a huge uproar from every legal gun owner in the United States. And then the NRA is going to say, see, look, we told you they're coming to take your guns. And then they're like, it gets blown up because we don't take it issue by issue. And that's the difficult part. So how do we interpret this one? Because if it's in his best interest in the safety of him and the community, that we're going to hang on to his weapon systems, his guns, well, if it's in a short time period, right? If it's for some emergent situation or there's different circumstances that require that, I think that's easy. But now to not get them back, that's where it changes for me, right? Because maybe the police officer, based on the situation, thought this was the best thing to do at the time, and then goes, then the next day or 2 days later, whatever that time frame goes, you know what? It doesn't fall under that. We need to give these back. That's a different case, right? Because
that would have been a better case.
Well, right. Then now what happens is then you don't get them back. That's different because this falls under two. I mean, there's a lot of issues with this. When you get into different mental health or domestic violence situations, especially, especially every police officer knows how volatile those situations are. That's where most of these, different traumatic or chaotic events stem from these because they're, it's high temper, it's high emotion content, it's very personal to people. And so that's why these domestic violence situations spiral out of control just incredibly quickly. So them stepping in saying, for your safety and for everyone else's safety, hey, you can't have these weapon systems because they're only designed to do one thing. They're designed to take a life. It's not like, hey, we're going to take your kitchen knives. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's why. Now, what comes in is exactly what we're bringing up right now is, well, then he goes to get them back and they said no. So now are we looking at a violation of his Fourth Amendment, 14th Amendment, and then, of course, Second Amendment rights? Or is this still within the best interests of the general public?
And so here's my argument, Brian. I think that, first of all, it would be great that when you post this up, when we're not live and you have the chance to put the link up, you can give the link that the U.S. Supreme Court is going to be looking to tomorrow.
Yes.
And so everybody can draw their own opinion. But here's the thing that I would caution any reader or listener, watcher, to get hung up on the Second Amendment. The reason we're talking about guns here is because of the imminent safety of the participants, and they felt that there was enough of a need to separate the guy from his gun because he made an offhand remark going, hey, here's a gun, which was unloaded at the time and not in his hand on the kitchen table. And he said, why don't you just take it and put me out of my misery? Now, even a casual statement like that, Brian, has to be taken with a degree of seriousness. You and I are involved in veteran suicide, and
right.
We know that having the means to carry it out and saying it are two critical parts
huge
of the puzzle.
Indicators. Yeah.
Okay, so the problem though is if you need a law, draft a law. The requirements for the Fourth Amendment, and that's where I think we should focus. I think the Second and 14th apply, but I think the Fourth is key. They're carefully drawn for a very specific reason, because the Fourth Amendment deals with your personal effects, your person, and your home. And what they did is they took community caretaking, which clearly and simply deals with motor vehicles. It started with vehicles, and
so
that's
let's
what
get,
we should
let's get
make
that.
A clear definition.
Yeah. So if we're talking about the different amendments that this falls under, I would start with the Fourth, and then of course the 14th generally applies almost any time the Fourth does.
Yes.
And then I would say that the Second Amendment issue here is the least of them, because that's
exactly precisely.
And so let's talk specifically about what this community caretaker clause, which as the docket shows in the court case, they gave so many examples where this has been the interpretation of that has been split by state courts, by federal courts, time and time again, because it's very difficult. These are usually very close calls when the judges make these. It's like and the interpretation of what that means. So go back to where that came from in the case.
Yeah,
I
love
the search of a vehicle. Let's start there.
But let's street it up. Let's street it up even lower first. Give it the lowest possible standard. You're a copper. You're walking in the park and you see a paper bag and a gym bag, and they're sitting next to a park bench. And you know, they're neatly, they're not leaking anything. They don't seem suspicious like bomb making components. And you see that there's nobody around. You see a kid running with a soccer ball. You go, hey, is that your bag? Nah, it's been there all morning. So you go over, you shine your flashlight, you take a little peek in it. Looks like some gym clothes. Somebody forgot it. So you don't have to go and get a search warrant to open that bag looking for ID to try to return those clothes or those bags to the rightful owner. Okay. So that would be a caretaking function of the police. That police officer has to do those type of things in a normal part of their day. Then it expands with the advent of motor vehicles. Carroll decision covers searching motor vehicles, folks.
So
look that up on your own.
Real quick before you jump into that, just because you gave a great specific example of that.
Yes, sir.
The bag with the kid playing soccer. Oh, is it yours? What? And now I have to find out who this is.
So right.
Just even that situation alone, which is the way you describe that, is one completely legal and falls with under normal police duties throughout the day, right? A defense attorney, if now that guy finds a bag of dope, and then he'd be
all over you.
That would be highly contested, right?
Yes.
So I'm meaning, although your example is a very concrete explanation of it, when that comes to actually litigating in court, that can be that there's going to be a whole bunch of different issues there.
Hence the reason that we would stipulate to the community caretaking. So
yes.
You have a motor vehicle. Motor vehicle has been involved in an accident. The person that's driving that motor vehicle can't speak for themselves. There's a laptop computer, just like in your own car, that's now on the floorboards, the guy's cell phone, and in the trunk, he's got some of his personal effects. Okay, well, there's an exception called the inventory and exception, which is an inventory or an exception to the search warrant rule, which applies that when a person's taken in custody, like for a DUI, those type of things, and they're no longer with their vehicle, you have to go through an inventory of the stuff so he can't come back and sue you later saying, hey, I had a CD player. Hey, I had this in the glove box and all that other stuff. Well, less intrusive is a community caretaking exception. You've committed no crime. you're the victim of an accident. Accidents happen all the time. But a copper has to protect your interests when you can't protect them yourself. And so he goes through, takes those items, and takes them into custody until you can come back and retrieve them. If that would have happened in this incident, and you kind of alluded to that with, hey, yeah, a day or two later, they knew and they came back, we wouldn't be having this discussion, right? But what happened is we have, and you and I have talked about it very briefly before in an episode, mission creep. What happens with the law is a person says everything between this, quote and this end quote before the period applies. But a reasonable person would assume that this applies. Listen, if it's not written in the letter of the law, you have to fight it out in court if there's a such thing as a spirit of the law. Here, it's very clear that this guy didn't have a violent background. He wasn't suicidal. They had been married for 20 some years. He thought his marriage was coming to the end. Brian, you and I have both been guilty and most times at each other saying, I'm going to kill you. Do you get what I'm trying to say? Yeah. If this doesn't happen, I'll hang myself. If something in my house was strong enough to hold me, I would have hung myself long ago. But that doesn't mean that at that point, you can come into my house. My house is a protected area. And here, your argument's going to be that, yeah, but these coppers got a search warrant. This argument that we're going to have on the 20th is that the coppers got a search warrant to go into the house for another character and take his guns because they felt that he was going to do something. And guess what they found when they went into the house on that search warrant, Brian? Bunch of bomb making materials in Florida. The guy looks like Ted Kaczynski. Brian will post that one too, folks. Take a look at it. Yeah. Talk about a manifesto writer. And the guy saying, hey, listen, you didn't have the right to draft a search warrant to come into my house for my own personal safety. That's my argument. Sean disagrees with me. I think the U.S. Supreme Court is going to side with me that even though it's good to get a search warrant, these pseudo search warrants, these false search warrants, where you go and you get a judge to sign them, I can't get one for a crime you didn't commit. You see my thing? I think you're future forecasting that a person is going to do harm. And anybody listening right now is going to go, Greg, you're giving these guys the right to commit suicide. This isn't about suicide. This isn't about guns. It's about your home.
Right. And that's a distinction that's been, you know, the vehicle and home exception to different amendments, or especially the Fourth Amendment, has been kind of clearly defined, right? Not clearly defined, meaning the difference between them has there's been
established. I totally agree with that
statement. There's been an established difference between what falls under what you can and can't do with when it comes to a vehicle and searching it, and what falls under what you can and can't do when it comes to someone's home. There is a clear distinction in the law between the two. And now you may argue which one apply or whether or not a search is authorized or constitutional or not. That's fine. But there is a clear distinction, and that's important to understand, because in this case, we are talking about an individual's home, right? So then they go in and search, they take the weapons, and then he tries to get them back and they say no. So that's where I had the issue, because at first taking them, like, look, we have to take into account the not just the well-being of him, but the rest of the community, because how many times has it been where we didn't do something or they didn't do enough, and then that person killed a bunch of people or killed themselves or whatever happened. And I know we can't do that, which we can't forecast every crime, and we can't prevent every single crime. But with some of these issues, and I know it gets into the people are more concerned about Second Amendment with these, and I think they don't get to that yet. Don't worry about that, the issue of what it is. Let's worry about where this falls under in terms of search and seizure. I think that's more important, because that's a greater infringement on your rights, because that covers anything, not just guns or whatever. I mean, whether or not someone can come into your home and search it legally. But that was my issue with the case, was I thought everything was fine. Okay, they have to go in and confiscate them temporarily due to the situation. And then it's when he goes to get them back. Hey, I went and got voluntarily checked out. I went and did these. I hit the wickets I'm supposed to hit. I did what you asked me to do. Now I want my property back. And because I would look at it to not maybe confuse the issue, just look at it as his property. You know what I mean? That's his lawful property that they came in and took and confiscated. Now he wants it back. That's where I had the issue, was, well, wait a minute. He did these things. Yes, I understand that there still is a potential threat or potential situation, but that's the constant, you know, conversation that is always taking place, is where what starts to violate our civil liberties, what freedoms do we have versus what we don't have for the overall greater safety, right? We do have certain restrictions and limits to our our liberties and our freedoms, because I can't do something that infringes on the rights of others. So it's illegal for me to drive over the speed limit because that's meant to keep the general public safer, right? So we've mandated that. So it's almost a similar issue of that, of what constitutes the greater good for him and society and the public as a whole versus infringing on his civil liberties and his rights afforded to him under the Constitution. And that's always in flux, right? That's always being interpreted back and forth. That's why you have to go, to court, you have to adjudicate something, you have to sue, and then something either has to get overturned or said, hey, no, that this law still stands. And that's going to go through many different levels. But the big thing is here too, Greg, is it's when it gets into mental health issues, it can become a gray area, and you can't, the law is supposed to be clear, black and white until you get in a courtroom, right? It can change and it can be interpreted differently, but at the time and place of whether or not a crime has been committed or whether or not a police officer has the right or doesn't have the right to do something, that's technically defined and written down and codified into our laws and our policies and procedures. So this gets into that area. And I know, I don't know what the right answer is here because it's a discussion, but I think in this case that the Supreme Court is going to say, I want to get your prediction first before
okay.
I think.
So I'll give you my prediction.
You are pretty good at predicting their outcomes.
First, I do have an unblemished track record, folks, on predicting U.S. Supreme Court outcomes for over 40 years, and that's not a joke. And here's my thing, Brian. Absolutely everything that you said was true. It was from the heart, and it's with your understanding of how legal issues have worked in the past and are likely to work in the future. And I applaud you for that. I am now going to be the Grinch that stole Christmas and tell you that this has nothing to do with civil liberties, and it has everything to do with the misapplication of a relevant law. So let me give you a street example. Okay, we come upon a person that's fallen down after a skateboard injury, and their knee is a mess, and it's scraped up, and I've got in my kit, I've got Betadine, I've got the CPR paddles. I choose to put the CPR paddles on the knee, saying that, hey, listen, it's a cure. It's meant to prevent certain things and cure certain things. I misapplied the science. Here, when we talk about community, Brian, we're talking about the community caretaking exception being specifically designed for vehicles. And I could quote 25, 30 case laws from each state where people tried to broaden the definition and bring it into the home. And your personal effects. That's what I think the problem is. Applying for a search warrant is the right thing to do in every situation where you have the time, because now you're bringing it to the court and saying, here are the facts that I know. This is what I can prove. I want your judge, giving me the ability to go into this person's private papers and effects, his most holy, that are hidden in his house, not in his car, which is a much lesser standard, a very much higher standard of going into your house. And therefore, that's why I'm saying forget the 2nd and 14th. I don't give a shit about that. Pardon me, at this case, I give more about your rights as a homeowner. Now, people are going to say, yeah, but it's in the best interest. I agree it's in the best interest. So figure out the mental health 24-hour hold. Figure out a new law that's about, you see where I'm going, Brian? I'm saying that we're on the right track here. But it's a violation, a clear violation of this gentleman's Fourth Amendment rights, and probably 15 or 16 cases that they have on the docket for tomorrow will show the same thing.
But why?
So the Supreme Court, just give you that prediction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Supreme Court is going to rule that applying for a search warrant to seize those items is not okay. It violates the Fourth Amendment rights because no crime was committed, and you can't predict a future crime. Sorry.
I would agree with that prediction on a Supreme Court ruling as well. But what you're saying then, that this right off the bat of them even going into his home was a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
His home to take those weapons on the second day is a clear violation of his Fourth Amendment rights. Coming in for the domestic violence where a neighbor called or they called themselves or the wife called and calming the situation down is fine. But at that point, if they didn't commit a crime, like Brian, you could make the statement, hey, your tea kettle's on, and if you don't stop it, it's going to burn down the house. but I can't take the effing tea kettle because it may have burned down the kitchen. Do you get what I'm trying to say? That's their, now you want to talk about civil liberties. That's their ability. Just because I'm in the house, I can't say, hey, water your plant or your plant is going to die. And I think these cops overreached, Brian. I think what they did, in the best interest of those two people, they overreached.
Yeah, but the examples you're giving aren't the examples of a weapon being involved, and I think that's
because the community exception has nothing to do with weapons. It has to do with a car and things that happen in a person's car when they were conducting a search of the car, which has a much less high standard.
Right. But that's not the facts of this case are different in the sense that they knew that he had weapons, that he had made a threat with that weapon or involving that weapon. They learned that during the course of their investigation of being called there,
yes,
right, to show up. So I think it's not I'm thinking this through as you're doing it, because I see what you're getting at here is that they should not have even been able to search his home. But did they give consent to search the home or come inside? That's different. And then they asked during the course of the conversation, obviously they asked about the weapons because it was brought up, meaning that he had
it. If they would have done that, you're exactly right. You're on the right track, Brian. And I totally agree again with everything you said. That night when they were investigating the case, if that gun was the proximate cause of the worry that they had, they could have taken that gun and they could have taken that ammo. Do you get what I'm trying to say? Involuntarily committed the guy and he would have never got it back and we wouldn't have been having this talk. What they did is they didn't do anything with the gun that night, which shows the court that it wasn't an important enough issue, right? They didn't arrest the guy for domestic violence. The guy's in his 60s, Brian. If he would have wanted to punch his old lady, he had.
Yeah, that would have happened.
That in the last 25 or 30 years.
They could make that argument that if this was going to escalate, it would have already escalated the next day.
Would have likely escalated.
And I get that, you know, the next day was different. That's why they said, well, he's being cooperative. It wasn't escalating again. So you're saying at that point, there should have been no reason for them to even search his home or go in there. There was nothing.
They could have gone in his home for the exception of the emergency exception. She called. He's not answering the phone. Yesterday, he may or may not have made a suicidal remark.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
That's a different.
Yeah. And if he's sitting there and he has bourbon in one hand and he's got the gun on the counter, it's right to take that gun. You see what I'm trying to say? Because now it's in plain view. Brian, you know those exceptions. What I'm trying to say is let's not get into my bedroom. Let's not get into my drawer if you don't have to, because my Fourth Amendment protects my home. I agree that you had the right to be there the first day and the second day. But if that gun was the issue, Brian, why didn't you take it on the first day? I'm saying that you got a search warrant because you thought the gun was important in the case with the Kaczynski looking guy. Okay. And you went in, you found some really good stuff. I think on that case, it's going to get thrown out, but at least we got bombs off the street. You see the balance?
Yeah.
So in this instance, tie goes to the runner and somebody's going to say, Greg, you're a fraud because you're supposed to be protecting people against suicide.
No,
I'm going to protect them against suicide.
Yes.
If you give me the right law to do it.
Well, this isn't
the right law.
That's and I get what you're saying. And that's why I'm trying to give it from the perspective of, well, societal perspective. Well, Greg, you know, there's safety. There's him, of her, of the community. We don't want to have anything could happen. It's a volatile situation, and there's mental health issues involved, and there's weapons involved. And this is where it comes from with a lot of this. And
you're coming from your heart.
No. But that's what people think. And you're giving a very strict interpretation of this is what the law says. This is what you can and cannot do. And just kind of remind people and not saying whether that's right or wrong. We're saying that's the law. If that needs to change, then that needs to change.
Can I give you an argument?
Yeah.
Okay. So I come into Brian Maron's house, the same exact issues that we're facing in the first of these cases, the old couple with the domestic, not the bomb guy that definitely needs to get some help.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
When you look it up, you'll know what I mean.
And you're writing a manifesto.
You're the guy. Yeah. If you're the guy, the Kaczynski looking guy, I'm just kidding. I love your work because I'm afraid. But listen, Brian, I come in and now I think that, you know what? He's got a lot of books on income tax evasion. He's got a poor man's James Bond. Those are all on the counter. Now, they have nothing to do with domestic. His wife never brought him up. They have nothing to do with the gun or the reason that I'm there. But I go out and I sit in my car and I go, you know what? I'm going to draft a search warrant because I think this guy's cheating on his taxes and I want to take a look at his computer. What's next? That's what I'm telling you. If you want to say that you're worried for my safety because I might blow my brains out, does that also mean that you can take my French knife because I might stab my wife or you might take a length of rope? I say that, Brian, here is a place where we've clearly defined that if it's going up to the Supreme Court in this manner, because they're misapplying this, that there's a need for a law and it should be a laser focused law.
I mean, here's the thing though. Well, yeah, I don't necessarily think more laws are the answer, but the idea is you're again with those examples, I would counter that and say, but that's when it gets into the slippery slope, right? And that's why I said we don't always need more laws, right? Because once you pass a law or once you don't, there's always unintended consequences of that, right? There's always something that plays out later that we didn't think would happen, but damn it, now we need to amend this or we need to change that or we need to overturn that, because once it goes into practice, that's often where, you're going to have spirals from that you didn't intend in the first place. But your example of him walking in, and drawing that type of conclusion from based on literature is very different than on a weapon, on a gun.
No,
but
you're in my house. You don't have any right to be in my house. So the law gives you the right to come in my house.
But you framed it in the sense of now I'm going to write up a search warrant. A search warrant based on your literature is very different than a search warrant based on weapons and statements accompanying those weapon systems. Those are two completely different things. So I could
get a judge to sign something saying, based on this information, I believe a law is being broken and the evidence is in this house to put together this case. And that if I don't get a search warrant, it might be destroyed. Brian, what I'm trying to tell you is the slippery slope here is the more we allow the law to be, I get it.
Right.
It can't be interpreted in this manner. And I know why you're saying it. And I agree with your statement, but let's take the gun out of the issue. You're in my house. I have the Fourth Amendment right to be secure against an unreasonable search. And here we had an unreasonable search, but a seizure.
But that's the thing is you have the right against unreasonable search.
Yes.
Was that an unreasonable search?
Yes. And the reason that I'm saying that, Brian, is if they would have committed a crime, if he would have said something that I'm going to shoot you with that weapon, and the cop found probable cause or reasonable suspicion, and the gun was part of the evidence chain, and he thought that the woman was in peril, he would have arrested the person. Now you're saying to me that this person might have used that gun to shoot themselves. And I totally agree with you as a human that that's a likely possibility and they should take that gun out of the house. But the law doesn't allow that because that person's house is his castle. It's his domain and he hasn't committed a crime. Had he committed a crime on that first day, they would have done something. Now, in the case of the other guy where he makes a comment, why don't you just shoot me? And so now the coppers draft a search warrant. They go into his house because they want to take his gun for his own safety. And the next thing you know, they're taking out bombs. You're going to tell me that those two successful cases, the guy didn't kill himself and they're being sued, the bombs are off the street, are enough to change the Fourth Amendment. I'm saying let's not be in a rush to change the Fourth Amendment. Let's fix a law that says in cases where tempers are high, and people are likely to endanger others or themselves, the court allows the coppers to take those weapons and sequester them somewhere safe, at a neutral zone, in a safe, wherever, for this period of time until the guy appears before the court and they go, look, I'm fine. And no reasonable person would be against that. But here they didn't do that, Brian. Here, two coppers on the street thought, I'm going to take this gun and not give it back to the guy. And they don't have that right. It's my house. I got a lot of shit in my house. That is nobody's business. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean that brought back to even what I had said earlier was I agree with the initial, okay, we took this out of safety and then they could have gone, oh, all right, well, we have to give those back now. That's not our right to confiscate them indefinitely or take them. Like though that's his property. It was taken from his home. Hey, we regardless of at the time, they could say, well, we didn't overstep our authority because of the situation. Now you'd be able to argue, well, you didn't take it last night. You didn't do this. What I'm saying is like, yeah, then they review it and go, you know what? You're right. You know, whatever the situation is, meaning that can be argued as well, but it didn't lead to them keeping his property and not allowing to have it back. And that's where right. I had the issue with it. So, but you're already going back. He's like, no, they didn't even have a right to take it in the first place.
It was a warrantless seizure. And Brian,
but warrantless seizures doesn't mean it's an illegal seizure.
Yes, it does. It does in this case, because Brian, what law did he violate? If you can show me that for his mental health, see, officers can't choose off of a menu they haven't been given. Right. That's all I'm trying to say. And I'm saying that, Brian, to fix this, what we need to fix it is have an additional exception that says when the greater good of the school or the people or the party or the child in the home, which there's plenty of laws on the books that this could piggyback. But what law did they choose? They chose this gosh damn community caretaking
exception. Well, that's
my only argument to you.
Well, and I think that goes to show you just how shaky this case is because of that. They go, all right, we're going to use this community caretaker standard, which has already been it's too open to interpretation. The evidence would show that it's so open to interpretation that no one can consistently agree on which way to rule on it. How many cases did they state in the docket?
You're exactly right.
Of different interpretations of it and where it goes and how it's always highly contested. So it is. So we're obviously the evidence shows that we're getting into a very gray area with that community caretaker standard, right? Because it's not really a standard. It's not clearly defined. It's too open to interpretation, right? So a law can be open to interpretation to a certain point, right? But this one it seems like there's the left and right lateral limits are are too wide, right? Because
I agree with you,
Ben. And I think that can be the issue here. And, you know, that gets into still what the public in general thinks, you know, how these situations are supposed to go versus what the law says it's supposed to go versus and on top of that, the policies and procedures of that department, of that agency, of that city, of that state, you know, there's differences in there. And that's an important distinction. So this is, you know, why, again, I even opened up the discussion with
you're right.
The problem with this is we make more policies or more laws or say this or that, or clearly define it versus giving people the tools, the resources to make the right these decisions, choices. Make the right choices, so we don't have to deal with it in the courts. Because look, this is today is the 19th when we're recording this of November. This is going to get heard on the 20th tomorrow, right? And this originally took place 5 years ago. Exactly. So just so everyone understands how long this takes to get to that level, it's 5 years, you know, and that's probably fast. So depending on how many courts it had to go through first. But that's an important thing to remember in this, because it goes back to like we're talking about, is that how do we resolve these situations better? And there has to be interpretation on the ground. There has to be a way to determine things at the lowest level possible so that it doesn't go through the courts like this and all the way up to the Supreme Court, where this could have been adjudicated right then and there at the local level with this city department between him and the citizen, the resident of that city, under the purview of the correct laws, right? I mean, that's totally kind of what, that's my general opinion on these things. Now, there's a lot of input from a lot of people in different areas that although it may make sense and be important and have value, does not fall under the law. And that's where I was coming in with the different social issues or mental health issues and how we approach this. And now that's a gun. That's not the, that's not the Turner Diaries, Greg. It's an actual gun, which is designed and built for one thing only. And you know what I mean? So it's
don't start on my Second Amendment.
But that's what I'm saying, is that it is different than the kitchen knife, because a kitchen knife is made to use in the kitchen. Now, can it also be used? And probably, I'm sure more people have been killed by knives than guns in domestic violence situations. I don't know. I'm just, I would take a wild guess right now if you had to ask me. But the point of it is a little bit different, and everyone, we see it from different perspectives, but you're giving a very strict legal perspective, and that's often not good enough for people.
Which is okay by me.
Right. And
totally agree.
That's an important thing to highlight in a lot of the topics we cover, is that we'll take it from the perspective of this is how you articulate it, this is how you explain it, this is where it falls under. And then people go, well, but that's not fair. And I go,
I don't like that.
I might even agree with you. I might go, yeah, you're right. I don't like it either. But guess what? That's the way it is. If you want to change the way it is, that's different. So that let's look at it from, and I know you're always going to be true to it of, I don't care. This is what the law says. This is what you can and can't interpret, but there is this social pressure, which is why some of these things occur, right? So now this police agency was, why do you think they did that? Well, because there's been other issues in the past. Now people are pounding on city hall door and a state and federal level saying, hey, we need to curb these. Let's fix this. Let's do that. What can you do right now? And then they go, well, we can do this. And then they overstep their boundaries. And I agree that when it gets heard tomorrow, I think that's what the Supreme Court will say. But I was surprised it made it all the way to there. So why do you think then it passed through all these lower courts before it got?
I think it shows that our government and our legal system works, Brian.
That it does. Yeah.
I mean, think it shows exactly that certiorari calling up a caper because it's demonstrative of a lot of things that are on a lot of people's minds works. And I think that's what SCOTUS is for, the Supreme Court of the United States. And Brian, I welcome looking at what the decision is tomorrow. We should do another update later to talk about that.
Yeah, we'll recap it. We'll recap it for sure. I think that would be a good one. But this is another just example of, and I like how you kind of gave the analogy of mission creep. That happens a lot, right? That happens. Yes. The idea of, you know, mission creep being, for anyone not understanding that term, it's okay, I was sent here to do this. And then, oh, but you know what? If I also do this thing here, that'll help me do what my specific mission was. And then that grows and it goes, well, now I get to do this and that'll help me with my mission. This is basically how things in Iraq and Afghanistan have been for as long as they have been. Exactly. But that happens with the law as well, right? That happens with, here's what I came here for. Next thing you know,
if it was for the right reasons, if you need a law, write a law. You know, you just can't invent stuff on the street.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think it's a pretty good interpretation of it, Greg, but this is we can do some more on these and with some other cases, because I think it's good for people to hear and understand how they get played out in the courts and how these things actually apply. And the appellate courts, state Supreme Courts, federal Supreme Courts, that's where laws really get implemented or defined, I guess I should say, right? They get a clearer definition because
stretched, tested.
All of those. All of those words to describe it. Yeah. Tested, stretched. But it's where precedent comes from, and precedent is extremely important, which is also why I bring up the point, even whether it's a judge making a legal ruling or a elected official enacting and signing a bill into law, those are going to have second and third order consequences that we can't always know. So meaning when a judge says, okay, I'm going to rule in this way, you've now established legal precedent for which other cases can then reference and say, hey, but back here, they ruled this. That's why the courts in general are, and I don't mean this in an ideological political way, but are conservative, right? In the point of, The idea is the precedent should stand. What has gone before was passed for a reason. So you have to have overwhelming amounts of evidence to have them overturn something, right? And that's what I mean by it's conservative. I don't mean who appointed who. I meant all, especially at Supreme Court level, they are very much in favor for legal precedent. Like whatever the court has ruled before in the past, they made it for a reason. They were smart people. They were well-informed. We're going to let that stand unless you come in with something so overwhelming,
compelling,
that it has to be overturned. And I think that's an important distinction for when people go, well, why does it make it all the way up here? And then they don't side with it. It's really, really tough. It's tough to make it all the way up to the Supreme Court and to have it rule in favor or against something, depending on, you know, what the actual case is. And I think that's an important kind of just thing to remember when we look at all these cases.
Point well taken.
So you're going with what do you think
my final words on this, Brian, are that you can't use a search warrant that was appropriately gained under the Fourth Amendment to resurrect the wrong law that started the search warrant. So I'm doing the cart before the horse.
I was going to say the chicken. That's the cart before the horse theory. Yeah.
The community caretaking exception is not strong enough to support the search warrant in either of these cases, the seizure, Fourth Amendment and the domestic violence caper that we were talking about, or the seizure of the bombs when they went in under the caretaking exception to take this guy's gun for his own good. And I think it's going to be clear from the Supreme Court. And my thing to you, Brian, is if you want a law, write a law. Let's just not piggyback on something that's so shaky and weak already.
I agree with your opinion of this case. And I also agree with what your prediction in the Supreme Court tomorrow. But and that's also just because I've learned from other cases.
Usually when you
predict stuff with the Supreme Court, I think you in at least as much as I can remember have been right with how they're going to side. Regardless of your thoughts,
many of them.
Well, yeah, regardless of your thoughts on the actual case, it's
right.
You're at least good at calling how they're going to call it, right? But this, my only caveat to me agreeing with everything you said was, I think from a procedural and policy standpoint, what they did at first of we're going to confiscate his weapons at the time, I would say that would be, just in policy, I'm not caring where it falls under legally, I think that's an okay policy. It's where they then kept them and didn't allow him to have it back where I thought the problem was, because one, that's just his property in general, but two, that's where you way overstep, meaning the interpretation at the time of him doing that, you can then look back and go, hey, that was wrong. Here you go. Sorry. High five. Well, we won't do this again. But it's once they decide to keep him, that was where I had the big problem with.
I love you. I admire your opinions. I respect them. I know where you're coming from. But if you come into my house, first it's my guns, then it's my books. And the next thing, it's my roller skates.
I
might fall down the steps on my roller skates. So stay the F out of my house.
Well, I think on the stay the F out of my house,
by the way.
we'll end it also. Don't forget that training changes behavior. Thanks for tuning in, folks. If you would like some more information about what we talked about today, you can head to the Left of Greg Patreon site, where we've added some more information about what we discussed, as well as some examples of how you can practically apply some of the lessons learned. Please remember to tell your friends about the show and follow us on Facebook at HBPRA. Thanks again and be safe.